This is the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by MorphVision. This show is dedicated to arming companies with the skills, know-how, and technology they will need to future-proof their IP protection strategy for the years ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. I'm Brandi Spence, Head of Marketing with MorphVision. Today, we have a special guest joining us, Joe Cottespotti, the Chief Intellectual Property Counsel at Bedgear, a brand of innovative bedding by focusing on an active lifestyle and well-being. Joe, without further ado, let's dive right in. Welcome to the show. We're thrilled to have you today. So to start off with, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you landed at Bedgear?
Sure. Thanks, Brandi. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm glad to help contribute to you and to your audience. Well, I've had a long career in law, long enough that I've been in several major corporations and several law firms, started my own law firms. And right now I'm currently, as you said, with a company called Bedgear LLC. This is a little different for me because they're a smaller company. As you said before, they're involved in some innovative bedding, which includes mattresses and sheets and pillows and related items like that. You wouldn't think there'd be a lot of hard IP, but surprisingly, there's a lot. And as far as soft IP is concerned, there's even more than that because it cuts across all the agreements that they do.
Interesting. And so what is it about, I guess, these days at Bedgear that really excites you the most about the work you do? What motivates you and gets you going?
Well, with all the positions I've had, I've been lucky to always be involved in a range of activities, whether it was, doing patent prosecution, doing trademark prosecution, doing M&A work, doing litigation, doing agreement work, licensing. And what I liked about this position, and it's been going on for the past 4 years, has been that I've gotten that range of activities still. I'm able to really go from one thing to the next. A lot of stuff is connected, so it feels kind of seamless or very additive to one to the other. That's very exciting because you get to see results in real time and you're dealing with contemporaneous issues. Things are happening right then and there, which is actually the second part why it's very exciting. It's that you're on, as a patent attorney, trademark attorney, you feel like you're looking over the shoulders of the inventor or the brand person, right? In working for a small company, you feel like you're right on that front line. You are there day in, day out, fielding questions with these people. So you seem to be more side by side with them. So that's a kind of a, maybe a difference that's not a difference, but it feels that way. It feels like you're just much more engaged.
Sort of like being in the trenches, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think your well-rounded experience certainly gives you a unique perspective into this world of IP. So with that in mind, let's just dive right in. How would you summarize the current landscape of IP protection today?
Well, I don't know if it's any different than any other time, right? There's so much going on, so many developments in the law that change your course and how you deal with your clients and deal with the law. What I like about today, as you think about it, is there's such a large amount of tools that are available for you. And I'm talking about administrative tools that help you analyze data very quickly, that help you actually do some of the work, that automate some of the functions that you do. But as well, you have a lot of different tools in terms of the law. There are a lot of more procedures and processes that you can take advantage of. That wasn't the case years ago. There was a couple of things you could do, and you sort of were stuck within those particular lanes. So it's nice to see the availability of those types of things that help you just get to the point of advising your client, right? Doing legal work as opposed to doing all the run-up to the legal work. The other thing that's really great is, in today's world, is the transparency of everything. Not only data, but the processes. You can take a look at competitors' information. You can take a look at trend lines. You can take a look at global pictures without having to do, digging and asking for information and holding, anonymous surveys and things like that, that we used to do in the past. Mm-hmm. Now it's all available to you. And again, it frees you up to do the real work, the real legal work. So I like those two things. The two things I don't like about today's world is, first, even though it's been over a decade, we still really haven't solved this issue, non-practicing entities, let's say in the patent space. That's still a problem. Not that those entities shouldn't function. It's just that it takes so much energy out of the system. Too many people are involved in defending and spending time and money on this issue, and it doesn't seem to be a resolution in sight, even though we have different processes now, different legal techniques that you can work with.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is just the amount of time that you spend chasing down people on the internet when it comes to brands. I can't tell you what a time sink that is, and with no satisfying result. It doesn't make a difference how you do it, what you do with, what tools you use. It just is continuous. And that's a problem. That's a real problem.
Which people are we talking about? Chasing down like the rogue players out there or?
Yeah, well, in the past, it would be competitors, you know, counterfeiters straight out. But now it's more than just counterfeiters, right? Yeah. These are people that are playing on your brand, maybe playing on your trade dress, things like that, where you have to chase down these companies that are everywhere at the same time and never ending their presence on the internet. And it's very difficult to figure out how to approach this. It's a little different again. In the past, it would be where if you were a brand owner, you know, you could make better choices as to who to go after, how to enforce, and then how to license.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would say to yourself, if you were a lifestyle logo, for example, you would say, okay, I'm going to go after people that are using my logo for apparel or for handbags or things like that. But then you wouldn't go after the person that's like a community jeweler that's making a pendant with your logo on it. It just didn't make any sense. It's harder to appreciate that now with the internet. You don't know, even though you can measure followers and web page access hits and things like that, you still don't get a sense of, am I going after the right people or the best target? Or do I just have to say, I'm just going to go after Amazon, you know, derived things and Wayfair and eBay and forget about everything else? But then everything else is 95% of the internet. So it's a harder judgment call.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, yeah, I see where you're heading with that. You need to make the most impact with the best resources you possibly have.
Right.
And I'm sure that can be challenging. To your point earlier about the things that you liked, you were talking about automation and basically having data at your fingertips. And it sounds like if you could have something along those lines that could help you see exactly where those people are and find them quickly and easily, that would be beneficial as well.
Yeah, and there are tools everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of what they call AI-based tools and a lot of algorithms going on and things like that. And that's helpful for sure.
Sure.
But I think it's a large tide, a large wave coming at you. And sometimes it's too much data.
So it's about how to segment that data further.
Right.
And find that intelligence and insight within that data.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So, Joe, let's talk a little bit about what businesses can do then to have a robust IP strategy. What are some of the key elements of a successful strategy?
I think this goes along with the challenges that an IP professional has today. You always have to worry about cost. That's always been the number one issue over the last 40 years that I've been practicing.
Right.
There's always this cost-benefit analysis you have to do, no matter the size of the task. And that's true even of whatever strategy you decide on. Cost is the factor. It's the factor that's going to allow you to spend some money. Decision, you know, makers look at cost. They can disrupt your strategy just by saying, hey, we don't have now any money in the budget or defer it, things like that. So whatever strategy you come up with, you have to take that into account and you have to be efficient with it. And it better have a payoff. You know, success then turns a lot of minds on with regard to whatever you decide to do. The other part of strategy is that it should be focused, right? It's easy to say that. It's harder to figure out, actually, what does that mean for my company? You know, it's always supposed to be aligned with business goals. It's always supposed to, again, have some impact to the stakeholders, but it should be focused. That's helpful with regard to cost. It also is helpful with regard to results. It's also helpful with regard to even creating strategies for other parts of the strategy. You know, if you're talking about enforcement versus licensing, you're talking about prosecution versus something else, portfolio maintenance, things like that. So it should be focused. I think so cost, it's got to be cost effective, has to be focused. Obviously, it has to be aligned with business goals. And you need the buy-in. You need the buy-in from the stakeholders and the decision makers. And you have to argue for some kind of duration. It can't be today's strategy. That's not strategy.
Right.
This is something that's got to go a ways. Whatever the time period happens to be, it's got to be where you know you're going to see the results. And then you can reassess. So whatever that time period happens to be, 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever that happens to be.
Yeah. So it almost sounds like your SMART goals, right? You're goal oriented. You're making sure you're able to measure it and able to expand upon it. And you want to show that ROI, right? Which is key.
You have to. Whether you call it ROI or not, because that's subjective, I think you need to do that. You need to show something and you need time to show that. It just happens that way.
Yeah. Now, a lot of companies may make mistakes in implementing a strategy. What are some of the most common ones that you might see or have seen in the past that they make when it comes to protecting their IP?
I think, again, they try to do too much with too little. They don't appreciate what it takes to execute. I've always dealt with executives who say, okay, I want to enforce my patents or my trademarks. And my first reaction to them is, well, this is what it's going to take. You have to decide if you go into sue, for example, you have to budget the whole lawsuit. And they'll say, wait a second, why can't I just write a letter? I say, because that's not how you execute. That's just the beginning part of this. You have to be willing to take it full tilt. If you're not willing to do that, then you're not willing to execute. You're not willing to enforce, because that's not enforcement. That's bluffing. You know, and sure, there'll be plenty of companies, maybe 90% of the companies, 95% of the companies that you are against may fold kind of quickly. But that's not what you're creating. You're not creating a strategy up for that. You're creating a strategy to win against people that are going to fight against you. And then you take the wins as they come along. I think that's probably the number one thing I see as a mistake. And it's a mistake on the part of the executives, and it's a mistake on the part of the IP professional who gets bowled over by the executive and doesn't stand their ground to say, no, that's not what it takes to do this. The other thing, again, is over-assessment of their IP. Again, a lot of decision makers, executives, even inventors or product people think too highly of their IP, or they'd like to think highly of it, and so they sort of force the issue. And the IP professional has to then bring them down to earth and say, no, you don't have what you think you have. There are limitations to this. Mm-hmm. Here are the warts. We have to deal with them. They're part of the strategy, but understand that that could sidetrack everything. So I think those things where you're not appreciating the extent of execution and the commitment to execution, and then second, maybe the over-assessment of what you have.
Interesting. One concern that has often come up or comes up in IP discussions is the balance between protecting your intellectual property and fostering innovation and creativity. How do you think companies can strike the right balance between these two important aspects?
Well, first of all, we, like many other periods, we are living in a great time for innovation. There is just so much stuff going on. And that is a real challenge, right? If you're a patent prosecutor person, and you have to deal with these AI types of inventions,
right?
Or space-based inventions and issues with regard to, like, you know, things that are happening beyond the Earth. These are things where it's not commonplace. It has not been commonplace. And now you have to deal with those issues. The same thing with regard to trademarks in terms of branding. Do you see so much innovation and a lot of co-branding opportunities and mixing and matching of people's brands? I think the first thing you have to keep in mind as an IP professional is get out of the way, right? Don't be the hindrance to that. That's not your job to have value judgments on that or to sort of put in obstacles. You're there to support. You're there to support, encourage, foster, promote. And you can do that still within the limits of being realistic about what you have, what your company has, what your client has. So I don't think that's it's one or the other. I think you have to be respectful of whatever's coming out of your company and your client. And I think then you just have to then, again, make a real assessment about strategy, make a real assessment about the valuation of your IP. And I think then you can shepherd the IP, the innovations better that way.
All right. Well, as we look into the future, it's always interesting to consider how things may change. So 5 years from now, what do you think the future of IP protection is going to look like? And you mentioned some of these different, you know, technologies that are sort of changing, you know, the creative aspect and innovation aspect. How do you see that changing the future of IP protection, perhaps? And how do you see your role evolving in the years to come?
Truthfully, I don't think you're going to see a lot of change in the next 5 years.
Really? Okay.
I don't think, you know, when it comes to the legal developments, a lot of stuff has happened over the last decade to begin with. And I think we're still digesting a lot of that stuff. So I think what you're going to see on the legal front is a lot of backfilling, meaning that there's going to be IP professionals taking advantage more of the tools that they have. So, for example, you see a little bit of people going to the ITC, you know, to beat off competitors. You see people using the trademark laws with regard to oppositions and cancellations and expurgements more. So I think you're going to see a lot of that backfilling of using what we have, because the law doesn't change that quickly. The one place where that may be exception is in Europe, because you're going to have this European patent court coming finally. And what that'll do, it won't be immediate, but over 5 years, it could probably be impactful, is that it'll have the same effect as the CAFC had in the United States back in the 80s, where all of a sudden now the decisions coming out of there are going to be the standard as to how do you interpret those patents in Europe, at least the ones that go through the court. And that's going to change a lot of how people work, you know, and a lot of then also interpretation of the patents, and obviously then the evaluation of the patents. What I see also is a big flood of, or a trend that's got to be dealt with, and that is the amount of patents and trademarks owned by Chinese entities. It's been accumulating. How are they going to impact the U.S. market? Are they going to be big licensors? Is there going to be a flood of stuff against them, IPRs and oppositions and cancellations? That thing is building and building. And in 5 years' time, I would imagine it'll start to crack and something will happen. You could have a lot of activity just in that space alone. But again, that's not legal developments, right? Those are, again, dealing with the mechanisms that we have now, the processes that we have now. But the technical innovations is going to stretch everyone's resources. Hopefully everyone's happy about it, because it's not only just more work, but it's more interesting stuff. It's different, you know, and we didn't even talk about pharma or the biological stuff that's going on, you know, in bioengineering. I mean, there's so much going on that I think IP professionals should be very happy as to what they chose as a career.
Well, it's exciting to think about.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, before we conclude, we'd love to hear your three top pieces of actionable advice for IP professionals who might want to succeed in the future. And what do you think they should be focused or prioritizing on?
So the very first thing at the top, and could even be the only thing I say, is you have to insist on quality. You have to. You insist it for yourself. You insist it for people you work with that work for you. In-house, outside, corporation, solo person, whatever it happens to be. Without that quality, you're always going to be looking at shadows, knowing that there are skeletons in the closet, things like that. But once you understand that your IP is high grade, then you can go without fear to say, look, let's enforce. Let's license. Let's cross-license without any idea that, okay, you're going to be sabotaged by what happened before. And quality has to happen at the beginning. You can't make up for it. And so it sort of leads me to the second thing, sort of a subpart, is if you're in the patent field, you need to squeeze your inventors. And if you're in the trademark field, you need to squeeze those product and brand managers. And what I mean by squeeze is that...
He's going to ask.
You have to... Every inventor loves their invention. They'll talk all day about it. But you've got to get them to talk more about what's around the corner too. Like, okay, where is this going to lead us? Do you have something else that's going to sort of be the second act? With trademarks, you have to ask, is this serious branding or is this just fluff? Is this just a campaign? Are you really going to stand behind the mark? You know, are you really going to, you know, not have a family of products based on this? You have to ask those questions to make these people give you more information than they did before. And that's part of your job as an IP professional, to be sort of this independent person, the fair, you know, honest broker, to say, I thank you for what you gave me. It's great stuff, but what else? What are you not telling me? What are you hiding? What's the problem? And that's part of the quality equation, right? You have to know those things. You get those things, then you should be very confident afterwards to say, okay, I've got IP that I can stand behind and have the decision makers rely on later on. And then maybe the last thing I would advise to someone would be try to find opportunities to participate on how the IP is being used. You know, here you are at the beginning stages of creation, of supporting them to secure the IP protections, the hard IP, or even the soft IP. But if you're involved in the transactions, if you can see how this is being used, or not only see, but maybe be a voice somewhere in that transaction to say, hey, this is how you can use it. This is what you have. I think that's invaluable for the professional, it's himself, herself, and also for their client, whether it's in-house or not. And you need to understand the impact. You have to be there to get it. You know, writing it down in some black and white, you know, document, some software license, some, you know, licenses in there, or some manufacturer agreement is great. It's good. But what happened after that? What's the end of that story? You should know that. You should try to get involved. Push it, you know, be pushy about that.
And that kind of comes full circle back to your beginning when we were talking about your involvement with Bedgear and what gets you motivated being in the trenches. It sounds like that's something that you're able to do now with them too. So
that's exactly where it's coming from, right? Because I can see that the exchange of information and the interchange right there is so satisfying as a professional and so valuable to a client. Who else is going to tell them that, you know, other than the person who helped create, helped protect, and then get it to your hands? Who else can tell you how to then work with it?
Exactly.
You can be a much more valuable asset to your client if you do that, if you try to do that. I mean, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's impossible. If you're in a big corporation, you're just one cog, you know, and everything else. But if you can do it, then try.
Well, that's great insight. Thanks for sharing that, Joe. We truly appreciate your time and your expertise today. That's all the time we're going to have for today. But before we do end it here, if our listeners would like to get in touch with you or learn more about Bedgear, where would be the places for them to go?
To get in touch with me, it's email is jcottespotty@bedgear.com. Telephone number, my direct number, cell number is 718-930-5998. And if they want to know about Bedgear, we have a website, bedgear.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for your time here. It was a really interesting conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I think our listeners will too.
I hope so, Brandy. Thank you very much again.
Thanks. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Future of IP Protection podcast brought to you by Mark Vision. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you'd like to learn more about how Mark Vision can help you transform your IP protection strategy, visit us at markvision.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the next episode.